Cinema Jaw is brought to you by the Second City Training Center. Find your funny this week with a $20 improv drop-in class at the Second City Training Center in Chicago. Your first drop-in is on us. Use the code TESTDRIVE for a free improv drop-in any Sunday at 7 p.m. For more information, go to secondcity.com/TC or call 312-664-3959 to register. And we thank them for their support. You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at Cards Against Humanity in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy. And sitting over there inside the fish tank, it looks like Filmy and Phil.
Hello, hello, guys.
This week on Cinema Jaw, Matt... I hit my microphone. You see that?
You son of a bitch.
Unbelievable. We're breaking the fourth wall. We're recording a podcast right now.
Yeah.
That's our topic this week, Matt.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Did you like that?
Yeah. I was going to go with the whole thing like I slapped you. You want another one?
We are breaking the fourth wall on the podcast as we cover our top five favorite moments in film where characters do break that fourth wall.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how we could break the fourth wall, but there really is no fourth wall in podcasting. We're already talking directly at people.
I did. I actually thought the same exact thing, and I thought, boy, there could be something fun with maybe Phil doing an edit right here.
Why am I even on the show with this guy?
Could work.
Yeah.
But it's tough on a podcast.
It is.
In movies, rather easy.
It is.
Yeah. And when done right, genius.
And when done wrong, terrible.
Epic fail.
Yeah. It's a risk.
Yeah. We're doing this in honor of a movie we'll be going eye for an eye on. It'll all make sense, Matt Kay.
Yeah.
Trust us.
I don't think I trust you.
Nobody does. So besides that wonderful topic, we have a lot more going on, don't we, Phil?
Yeah. As you said, we are going eye for an eye on a fourth wall break movie. You probably guessed it. We are going eye for an eye on Deadpool 2 this week.
And we have a review of Kodachrome from Netflix.
Nice. Mm. Plus, in honor of Deadpool 2, Matt, you are taking Phil on in Ryan Reynolds' Josh Brolin movie trivia.
Okay. Wow. God, I got to get a win in somewhere here.
Yeah.
So, Phil, I'm bringing my A game, buddy.
I don't know that much about Josh Brolin, so I hope I get the Ryan Reynolds questions.
All right. I feel confident. That bodes well.
I hope so.
Trying to break the fourth wall still?
No, I'm done with it.
Okay.
Did you hear that?
No.
No, me neither. I can't break the fourth wall. I tried with my mind to break it, and it just wouldn't break.
Well, hey, man, just keep exercising your mind.
Yeah. Now, normally we interview a guest here. I guess we could break the fourth wall this way, but there's no guest.
So yeah.
Spoiler we can't even
alert.
Do that.
Yeah.
No. That chair to your left is empty.
It's actually to my right. To your left.
Oh, damn it. Yeah. It's my left. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fourth wall.
We got beers in front of us, water. Phil's wearing Monsters U.
I don't think
hat.
Describing everything that's going on is breaking the fourth wall, per
no?
se.
No. No. Okay. We got nothing.
Keep trying.
All it's right. almost like breaking every wall, right? Because we're within all four walls.
That's true. Right. Just stop breaking walls.
Yeah. See? I hit my microphone again. That joke's not getting old.
No. Yes, it is.
All right. Let's get the show rolling. Let's go for Eye for an Eye.
Yes. Eye for an Eye, Deadpool 2. After surviving a near-fatal bovine attack, a disfigured cafeteria chef, Wade Wilson, struggles to fulfill his dream of becoming Mayberry's hottest bartender while also learning to cope with his lost sense of taste. The film stars Ryan Reynolds and Josh Brolin. It is directed by David Leitch, who also directed 2017's Atomic Blonde. Rye, we're throwing it on over to you.
Wow, I was a fan of Atomic Blonde. Matt, I was a fan of the first Deadpool. I don't really know too many people out there that were not fans of Deadpool. They might not have been fanatics, but I didn't hear anybody come out of the movie and dislike it.
I almost want to go back and roll tape on what you thought of Deadpool 1.
I remember I skipped it. I didn't go to the screening and
was
I missed
Marvel
it for
Band
a while.
Days?
Maybe, but I know I ended up catching up with the film. Yes, on DVD. It was probably during my Marvel Band, now that I think about it. I didn't see it until it was out for like rental or video on demand and enjoyed it. I remember coming in saying, "You were right. Deadpool is pretty damn fun.
See, now I got that on tape.
But Deadpool 2, do we really need it? Am I that excited? To be honest, not that excited, but I am interested to see if they can keep this thing going. Matt?
Yeah, obviously interested. Love Deadpool, love Marvel and superheroes and stuff. And the first one was really clever, so I think it's going to be good.
Phil?
I'm interested also. We're going 3 for 3. I think the thing that I'm most excited for, that I, as far as I know, no one's talked about, but there's got to be a Josh Brolin Thanos joke that they have coming.
It's already done in the trailer.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong about that, but he makes some Thanos joke right in the trailer. One of the many, many trailers that have come out for this.
Yeah, I must have missed it. Because you're right, there's like a million. Is it in the one where he's wearing pink? Because I never watched that one all the way through.
I don't know. It's almost like there's a whole movie's worth of material just in the trailers, which is kind of clever. They're good at the marketing.
They are. I was going to say, even the synopsis that Phil read, in all honesty, breaking the fourth wall, we grabbed that from IMDb. And look at the humor that's even in the synopsis.
Has
of what
nothing
they're...
to do with the movie.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's even pretty clever. So they really are going above and beyond to be clever, break the fourth wall, you know, be in on the joke the whole time. And right. I do appreciate that extra effort.
Chimichangas.
Whatever the hell that means.
Deadpool thing.
Hmm. 3 interesteds for Deadpool 2. Hopefully we'll see this one together and get a review.
That'd be fun.
Wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah. While we were at C2E2, which is the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo down at McCormick Place, we thought this was a great opportunity to ask these individuals who are hyped up on all their superhero, pretty much everything, what, if anything, are they worried about Deadpool? Can they keep the magic going that the first one had? And here's what some of the fanatics had to say.
I'm Trace from Normal, and no, since they haven't worked on it for 11 years, I think it'll probably do as successful, but I don't think it'll nearly be the like amount of money they made off of Deadpool 1. I think it'll be fun though. Definitely want to see it.
All right. Kevin Johnson. Deadpool. Can Deadpool 2 capture what they did in Deadpool 1? No sequel can really catch the first one, I feel. Like, it's kind of doomed by, like, you already set a precedent for it. But if anybody can reach it, I think Deadpool will be able to pull it off.
My name's Corinne. I'm from Chicago, and I'll believe it when I see it. So I hope so.
My name's John, also from Chicago. I think it has a chance to capture the magic, so we'll see. Yeah.
Jeez, that is a tough one. Well, Zach Pope from Lansing, Michigan. And I think Deadpool 2 is going to crush the magic of the first one. I mean, the magic was there. Crush it up, snort it, and a cloud of magic is the second one. That's what I'm going with.
I think so. I'm Hunter Han from Kiwani, and I think he can. I like the first one a lot, and I think he could do it again.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, we got to ask somebody dressed as Deadpool.
Yeah, here we go. Just say your name, where you're from, and can the second Deadpool movie capture the same magic as the first?
My name's Matthew Leva. I'm from right here in Chicago, and seeing the fact that Cable's going to be in there and he's done really well, I'm expecting it to do the same. I'm expecting it to hold up to the same as the first one.
Awesome. And what are you? What Deadpool in particular are you dressed as?
Pirate Captain Deadpool.
Awesome. Thank you.
Little Spider-Man held up onto my hat.
Sounds like most of them are on board.
Largely positive.
Yeah. We even interviewed at one point a person dressed as Deadpool.
Yes, he was a pirate Deadpool with a Spider-Man on his shoulder.
And I think if you dig back in our Instagram a little bit, there's a nice photo of me, Matt, and the Deadpool pirate.
Yeah, we were right there with him.
Funny, listening to those clips, it reminds me of just how ridiculous C2E2 is.
Ridiculously fun.
Speaking of fun.
Somebody lost his phone at C2E2.
Yeah, speaking of fun, there is a new movie out on Netflix.
Indeed. Kodachrome is a story about the end of an era and a Netflix original. Can the studio frame up another hit like last year's Mudbound, or is it just overexposed? Ryan and I took to the stream to find out.
There's only one place left in the world that processes Kodachrome, and that's Duane's Photo in Parsons, Kansas. Your father found four rolls he shot a really long time ago, and he wants you to dry them.
I have not spoken to the man in over a decade.
He's dying.
Let's go. We're burning daylight.
What, you're going too, huh?
Yeah, unless you want to give me my shot.
Jason Sudeikis plays a self-absorbed record label executive who is down on his career luck. That's when he meets Zoe, played by Elizabeth Olsen, and his estranged father's assistant and nurse, who appears in his office one day with a proposition: accompany her and his dying father on a cross-country trip to the last lab in America who can develop Kodachrome film, and he will get a meeting with a band he desperately needs to sign. I would call this movie enjoyably predictable. It's perfectly serviceable romantic dramedy with some good acting moments from the cast, particularly Ed Harris, who plays the estranged father, an accomplished and respected photographer who also happens to be a real self-admitted a-hole. I also really like Jason Sudeikis, who I feel could be given some more roles like this. And I've even gotten over the scars that Elias Rodriguez gave me over Elizabeth Olsen and her strange nose. She looks downright natural in this movie, and it was sort of refreshing having a person like her in this role. Where the film falls down is the script. There just aren't many great character developments or quippy dialogue exchanges to speak of, and all of the beats can be seen from a mile away. That said, I still teared up at parts, but I'm a sucker for father-son stuff.
It's so funny. I just wrote down just a little, you know, capsule thing to do a rebuttal. And there is really no rebuttal, because what I had wrote down was, talk about one predictable movie. It has all the beats you would expect. And I think the ending of this film, you can actually see it coming about 10 minutes into the movie. You know how this movie is going to end.
Yeah.
And it's actually okay, because I was a little moved by the ending. All that said, even though I knew it, right?
Yeah.
But it still got me a little bit. The script does not get deep enough with the characters or the relationships between them besides the Ed Harris, Jason Sudeikis. It really focuses just on that.
That's the important one.
It is. That said, enjoyable journey, I guess, from the start, because it is sort of a road trip and road movie in general. And as I said, I was moved at the ending. Sudeikis, I thought, was sufficient, but I wonder if a stronger actor would have carried the drama and it would have resonated a little bit more with me.
I liked his performance. He was just angry enough, and I believed him as the jerkwad record executive.
All right, maybe. But there's a couple of moments that really are supposed to get all the feels going, you know. And it was just okay. It's all right, but I don't know if Jason Sudeikis was selling me at those key moments.
Well, Ed Harris picked up the slack.
He did, for sure. And then, lastly, Elizabeth Olsen here. Boy, you nailed it with Elias giving us scars, talking about that episode.
It was way back in Godzilla.
It was when we were reviewing Godzilla, and he went on this ridiculous rant. I mean,
we were doing our biggest mutants, and he said it was her nose.
Yeah. And I am a big fan, actually. I loved her last year with opposite Jeremy Renner in Wind River, which is streaming now. Throw that in the Jawbox, which streaming service it's on, because not enough people have seen that movie. But I enjoyed that film quite a bit. And here I thought she was excellent as well, but there's this one scene where she is talking to Jason Sudeikis, and it's an intimate scene, and it's a side profile of her. And I couldn't help but, during that particular moment, actually think of Elias's rant on her nose, because it is sort of slanted in a weird way from the side profile.
I don't think so.
I do pick up on it.
Really? Okay.
It's alien-like in a way, only from the side. But I know in this movie, I picked up on it.
He said her nose was like too thin or weird, or she's had some surgery or something. And I was looking at it like, you know, because they're nice and close on her face quite a bit in this movie, because there's like, you know, discussions going on. It's a talking head type movie. And I'm like, yeah, she looks like a normal person, like refreshingly so.
Yeah, we did have one moment, speaking of Elizabeth Olsen and how she looks in this movie, that it's one of those things that bothers me in films in general. And that's when a character is getting ready to go to bed, or they just woke up, either way. And yet, for this particular scene, they just look absolutely perfect. And you have it here where she's going to bed, and he ends up stumbling into the room to talk to her. And it doesn't look like she's going to bed. It looks like she's going out on a runway model. It's ridiculous.
You think so?
They do that all the time in movies.
Well, I mean,
it drives me nuts.
It is a movie.
Like, who goes to bed looking like that? I keep thinking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a minor gripe.
I mean, you don't want to see me when I go to bed. It's an ugly scene.
This is true. Yeah. This is true.
All right. So it sounds like we'll start with some things that you guys disliked this week since it's fresh on our mind. Least favorite scenes, what you got?
This ending is utterly predictable. I mean, I saw it from a mile away.
But does that make it bad? Because I agree, predictable. And to give you an idea, we haven't even sold the Kodachrome, which is the old film that Kodak made. The whole idea is that they got to develop these roll of film. So you see where it's going. But I think even with the predictability that I think everybody, any seasoned film goer, as soon as they start watching this movie, knows where it's going to go. I still think it was somewhat enjoyable, at least.
Yeah, like I said, I was along for the ride. And yes, I saw everything coming, but I still more or less enjoyed the movie.
I had a couple of problems, actually, so not just one. First off, there is a moment where Sudeikis' character gets a little bit closer with Elizabeth Olsen. And it should be noted, Elizabeth Olsen's character is actually supposed to be a nurse for Ed Harris.
Right.
And you get no sense that she is a nurse, and she doesn't perform any caretaking until about halfway through the movie. Ed Harris falls, and she actually goes into the bathroom to help Ed Harris. And it's literally the halfway point of the movie is the first time that you see her do any caretaking at all, yet she's so...
Well, she's also his assistant, and you get the sense that he's obstinate and ornery.
That was a little bothersome, but this is the scene that really bothered me is Sudeikis and Elizabeth Olsen's character get close together, and then the next morning, she sort of flies off the handle and wants to just leave and run. And I don't think the script ever got deep enough into her character to justify her actions during the scene. It just comes, for me, it came out of the blue. And
really?
I was just like, okay, where did this come from?
Wow, that's interesting. I really liked that part, and I thought that was probably the best moment for that character.
I just didn't get it. Who the hell is this person?
You do, because they have this exchange where they're talking about, let's just say they both had previous relationships, and they're talking about their previous relationship. And in this moment where she's running away, she brings up something that he said where he categorized all people who do one thing one way, and she realized that was her, or they didn't want to hurt each other, I guess. I really liked that beat.
All right.
That was one of the only unpredictable parts of the movie.
I will give you that. It was unpredictable, but it's because it made no sense. That's why it was unpredictable. How about this? Key moment where Sudeikis finally has a moment where he sticks up for his dad, and it comes at a critical time for him to make a decision. And I'm not sure that the feelings were earned there for Sudeikis' character to finally make that revelation that he was going to stick up for his dad. You know the moment I'm speaking about. And I remember thinking, this is false. It feels false. Like, it's written there, but I don't think the characters journeyed far enough to actually have those feelings on screen for me. It felt very unbelievable that the character would have made that decision at that point.
All right. That one I'll concede.
Okay. Two more. These are really small ones.
Boy, you got a lot of gripes here, man.
Well, these were just little things that really bothered me. There's a moment where Sudeikis is going to put on one of these star machines on the ceiling.
Yeah.
In his old bedroom.
Yeah.
It was so dumb.
Are you kidding?
Okay.
See, this is because you don't have a childhood.
No, I'm not kidding. Okay. Close your eyes, he tells Elizabeth Olsen. She closes her eyes. He puts on one of these $5 star machines, and she opens up her eyes. She's like, oh, it's beautiful. And then they cut to this ridiculous scene.
Whoa.
I've seen those machines. They suck. Let's be honest.
It was a nice little thing.
It was dumb.
Hey, listen, they were drunk, Rye. The whole point is, like, you know.
Last but not least, this is another gripe of mine. They're going on a road trip in a convertible, and the top is down.
And Ed Harris is
wearing that hat. That is, it's like one of those kind of hats like the shark in golf would wear, Greg Norman, those straw kind of hats.
Yeah.
This thing would fly off in an instant if they were just doing it on a side street, much less on the highways from New York all the way to Chicago. And his hat, he just leaves it on. It never moves. Come on. Why put that in there? Just have him hatless.
Have you ever sat in the back of a convertible?
Yes, and I've lost my hat, and I've had it tied to my head, and it's gone.
Really? No, it's a wind tunnel. It actually, by the time the air gets over the windshield, it sucks everything down.
It would have been blown right off. Nah. That hat.
You're fine. You're fine. I thought the same exact thing.
All right, so let's hear some positives now. We ragged on it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Turn it around. Jeez. Let's hear some good stuff.
So the what I will okay. So Ed Harris's character is terminally ill. This much we know from the outset in the trailer. No spoilers. So there's a moment when he sort of has a very. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this without spoiling anything. He has an exchange with his son when he's getting near the end. I think that's fair to say. And that moment, Ed Harris becomes Ed Harris and gives us probably the best performance moment in the entire movie, and I was moved.
Also, top of my list for sure. That's probably the. You're right. I mean, acting wise, you really see some brilliance there from Ed Harris, and it is very moving for sure. Two other notables is Eddie Vedder's song comes on. Well, it's sort of a montage to them driving, and I'm convinced Eddie Vedder on a road trip is key. Great music to listen to.
I'm not convinced.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Another great moment in this, and this sounds odd, is the end credits of the film. Because we're talking about a photographer trying to get his last pictures developed, what they decide to do is give these actual shots filmed on
Kodachrome
during the credits, and they're gorgeous.
They really are.
I mean, really. I'm not exaggerating. I was like
the colors. Yeah.
I was in awe looking at these shots at the end of the movie. I was really moved by it. How many often you watch the credits like that? And I watched every single shot, and then after that main the actors and all these shots, it comes on and says filmed in 35mm Kodak. It was great. It was a nice touch.
That was cool.
Really,
and it doesn't even look like film at all. So
it was nice.
That was unpredictable.
That was unpredictable, and I enjoyed it.
All right, what do we have for influences?
I mean, so As Good as It Gets really pops into my mind, I guess, because it's another sort of road trip movie with three people who don't necessarily want to be together. And that's all I got.
I went with a mashup here. Road trip movie-wise, Dutch.
Dutch is a good movie. Right? I don't know how it compares. I guess a little.
And mix that in with a movie where we saw a son having a very difficult time with sort of a pompous artist-like father, and that's the Meyerowitz's story.
Mm.
And you sort of feel that same type of relationship that Adam Sandler and Ben Stiller have with their father in that movie, played by Dustin Hoffman.
What about that Bruce Dern movie from not too long ago?
That's a really good one also, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in that case, he's a little bit more out of it as he's elderly and thinking he won the lottery. But, getting to know your father in as stern as sometimes fathers can be. And, I mean, I know that's how you are with your kids.
Oh, right? Yeah, I keep those little shits in line.
Yeah, there we go.
Get
breaking the fourth wall. I like it.
Not true.
What about anything that you guys learned from watching Kodachrome?
That somehow scripts like this just get greenlit.
As predictable as they can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's cookie cutter. Like bingo cookie cutter.
I looked up Kodachrome, right, to see if it was really done, that this whole
idea.
Oh,
no, that's true. It's based on an article.
And this is what I learned. And this is actually something that was interesting. I ended up going down the hole a little bit.
Did you read the article?
Yeah, reading a little bit more about Kodachrome. And I guess a little, in a weird way, breaking the fourth wall. I don't talk about my dad that often. My dad, for...
I don't think you ever have.
If my dad, for... his entire career was a photographer. That's what he did for a living.
No kidding. I didn't even know that.
No, breaking the fourth wall big time. So my dad was a photographer. So today at lunch, getting ready for the jaw, I called my dad and I said, hey, I watched this movie, Kodachrome. Kodachrome, he says. They're not making Kodachrome anymore. I'm like, no, they made it's a movie about how there used to be Kodachrome. Then I had to tell him. But he was like, what's this movie? How do I see it? So.
Did he say, like, Kodachrome was
he shot, shot on it. And he even said, we used to have the slides, go on vacation, you'd shoot it.
And that's how you would get them, as slides?
I mean, you could get them.
Prints.
But the way you would see it in the vibrant colors is getting those slides and putting the screen up in the living room. And It was the way to go, professional color-wise, because still that was at a time where black and white, too, was still sort of like the artistic look by a lot of, you know, famous photographers. And if they were going to shoot it in color, Kodachrome was the way to go at that time. So
interesting stuff.
Yeah.
What about movie poster quotes we got for this one? Rye, I assume you got some help from your dad.
Yeah. Take a picture. It'll last longer.
He actually got some help from Pee Wee Herman. Who, you never know. Could have been his dad. Movie poster quote, bad writing, well acted. That's my quote.
Not bad. Before we assign some Jaws, just some other little scratches I made in my notepad here. Live, the band, gets a little bit of callback. Sometimes they go for that. They pick a band. And this one, it feels flat, but when they finally do start singing the song, I chuckled. Maybe it's because I like that song and like the band.
Everybody
as well.
Likes that song, but yeah, I don't know.
And then one moment I just didn't get to in the review is there's this very strange moment between Ed Harris and his brother, who they stop off to see at Cleveland.
Yeah, that was tense. I like that
and
moment.
And he says something that hadn't been brought up
ever.
Before
right.
at this dinner party. And at first, I didn't really like it. And I was sitting there with my little notepad, and I was like, that was bizarre. What was going on? But then I really picked up that right before that, you see his brother, which is Jason Statham's uncle in the movie, have this moment with him in the kitchen. And I think that was Ed Harris being jealous of their relationship
as
the father-son. And I wrote it down. At first, I was like, boy, that was weird. And then about 5 minutes later, I was like, oh, wow, I really got
you
it
connected
now.
Those dots.
Yeah.
And he was jealous because
I like that.
At that moment, he thought that he was starting to get closer with the Zoe character,
right.
the nurse.
Right.
So those two things combined into a sort of an outburst behaviorally.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
So let's assign some Jaws. What are you giving it, Matt?
This is a passing grade. It's a 2.5, you know, and I think I'm being generous.
Yeah. I want two Jaws. Two and a half Jaws. I'm right with you. It's in that range.
Yeah, it's in that range. I gave it the 0.5 because I think, you know what? This is fine for a Netflix movie. It's definitely better than Cloverfield Paradox. It's a serviceable film.
And what's interesting, too, after all the credits roll, Ed Harris comes back on screen and says, stop watching this damn movie. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Yeah, that's not true.
Not true. No breaking of the fourth wall here.
No.
But that is our topic this week, since we went eye for an eye on Deadpool 2, and we're getting pumped up for it, Matt Kay. You want to get started, or you want me to get started?
No, I'll do it.
Usually there's a lot of pointing at this point.
Yeah.
See?
That break in the fourth wall. Yep. So, at number five, guys, I have Deadpool.
The first one.
Yes, the first one. And if I have to pin this down to one scene in particular, it's the end where Deadpool apes Ferris Bueller, which we may talk about, may not. I don't know. Can't break the fourth wall there. But the end of Ferris Bueller, where he comes out in the bathrobe, the scene is shot identically. I don't know how they do these things. I guess it's digital, but it looks awesome. Deadpool's in the bathrobe. It's hilarious. The whole movie was great. The beginning scene, too, when he's drawing the pictures, and I love it.
Yeah, not to mention all of the beginning credits in Deadpool.
Yes.
Which were hysterical.
They were.
I remember thinking, just the way the movie started, all right, I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah, it's right up your alley.
Like it.
What you got there?
Swings it over to my number five, a film I can't remember. I think you were a pretty big fan of. Came out just a few years ago, directed by Adam McKay. It talks about the financial crisis in sort of a very unique and funny way. I'm speaking of The Big Short. And the breaking of the fourth wall moment happens when they have to actually get down to the nitty-gritty and explain some terminology and technical moments of what happened with the housing crisis mm-hmm. and the financial crisis as a whole. And what Adam McKay decided to do was to turn to celebrities to explain it.
I didn't like this.
Oh, I loved it. I remember just enjoying the heck out of this.
So Margot Robbie in a bathtub?
Hilarious.
Didn't like it.
So Margot Robbie's sitting in a bathtub, and they even just the way they get to that moment, they say, and now here to explain the housing crisis is Margot Robbie in a bathtub. And there she is. And she just goes on and talks about it. Loved it. I love The Big Short.
I love The Big Short. That moment. And if you go back to my review, I remember feeling, I don't know, it was awkward and maybe even problematic. I didn't like it. The other one I don't think I had as much trouble with, because they had another celebrity do one of these explanations.
I don't remember who it was. Can we throw that in the job
box?
Throw
it in the job box. Besides Margot Robbie, who? What other celebrity does a...
Explainer.
Yeah.
That might be difficult to look up. All right. That swings it around to my number four. And I have a movie which is actually my father-in-law's favorite movie.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
In order to get married to his daughter, my wife, Heather, I had to watch this film. It was a requisite, and I've watched it a couple of times since. Whenever there's a new device in my family, he asks, can this film be viewed on such device? And it is Tulane Blacktop.
What?
Have you ever heard of this movie?
Have not.
Yeah, it's a cult classic, man. James Taylor is in it, and he is extremely young, like 24 years old in this movie. Quintessential gearhead movie. It's about cars and drag racing. And if you're into cars, even just a little bit, you've heard of this movie. And it's about these two guys and their friendship and racing. And where it breaks the fourth wall is at the very end, is it's about burning out. And the film itself, they melt the film stock at the end. So it just, like, you're watching the movie and something important is going to happen. And then you just see the film, like the projector light got too hot and melts the film away. And that's how it ends.
Wow.
It's an epic movie.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth checking out. It's very
Blacktop.
Esoteric. Tulane Blacktop.
Throw that in the job box. See if it's streaming anywhere, Phil. Tulane Blacktop. I might check that out.
It's a gearhead classic.
My number four could be anybody's number one.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is directed by Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks, one of the greats at breaking the fourth wall.
Agreed.
And I remember, I was so late to the game on this particular movie that I knew from watching it, I knew so many of the scenes and the big jokes that the film has and are classic, but I didn't know about the ending. And I'm speaking of his classic Blazing Saddles. And the whole movie does not break the fourth wall, and you got all these great campfire farting jokes and all the classic Blazing Saddle moments that we know. But then near the end of the movie, the entire story narrative reveals that it's the story of a Western town under assault that the whole thing is taking place at, is actually on the Hollywood backlot as they actually crash into the production of a ritzy black tie musical that's going on, also filming at the same Hollywood lot. And I was like taken aback. I was laughing and just stunned, not knowing, because I was so late to the game that this hadn't been spoiled for me. So all of these jokes that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I've sort of seen this before,
or heard,
you know,
of it, yeah.
Heard of it. Did not know, totally stunned, and loved this moment that Blazing Saddles just randomly crashes another production on the same Hollywood lot. Was hysterical.
That is a good one, man. All right, at number three, I also have one that I think could be your number one. It is from the movie Goodfellas. And that's when it was all over. The end of Goodfellas.
You're talking about the courtroom, or when he's in the chair out at his house.
No, I'm talking about the end when he says, "And you know, I get to eat instead of pasta
right.
and marinara, I have egg noodles and ketchup, and live my life like a schnook." You
yeah.
know, he's addressing the camera directly. It's a great ending.
He does actually address the camera directly in the courtroom too, right before that.
Is that when he first breaks the,
yeah,
the fourth wall?
Yeah, the first time. And then, again, as you're talking about.
It's a continuance,
yes.
I guess. Yeah.
And then he talks about it at that point when he's at the very end in his whatever house and witness protection program.
I think that's the same scene. It's just like.
It just continues?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
It's been a while for me, too.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, though. Good pick. My number three comes from a movie I believe you still have not seen. Stars your man, Iron Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer in a movie I think people who see it are huge fans of, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
You're right. I still haven't seen it.
Catch up with this one. And the breaking of the fourth wall, again, this comes at the very end. Here's three movies, Blazing Saddles, Goodfellas, and now Kiss Kiss Bang
and
Bang.
And Tulane Blacktop.
That don't do it throughout the entire film. And then all of a sudden at the end, they have a moment and it totally works. In this circumstance here with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you have Robert Downey Jr. starts talking to the camera in the living room, and he starts discussing exactly what happened and what's going to take place next for the characters, and he starts to put his feet up on the desk. And as he's doing this, you can see Val Kilmer coming in from the background, interrupts him, tells him to get his feet off the desk. And then Val Kilmer turns the camera and starts talking to it as well. Great way to end. Just a brilliant movie. It's the same guy who directed Nice Guys. The Nice Guys?
Mm-hmm.
I forget the guy's name. Lance Black? Throw that in the job box, will you? I believe it's Lance Black. But so
I miss Val Kilmer, man.
He was good.
He's had some health problems recently.
Yep. And this was one of his last, what I would say, great ones.
Hmm.
So
hope he comes back, man. At number two, it's not common that we get a fourth wall break in the James Bond series.
What?
In fact, I would say it's only been done once by the man who only played Bond once, George Lazenby in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And the scene in particular, I can't remember the exact setup, man. It's been a long time, and that's probably the Bond movie I've seen the least. But he says, like, that didn't work out so great for the other fellow. So it's almost like a throwaway, but he's clearly making a reference to Sean Connery as James Bond, because nobody thought anybody else could step in and play Bond. Sean Connery is James Bond. I mean, that was the marketing, and really, it was it would be like if somebody came in and tried to play Iron Man at this point, but they made it work. I don't know if George Lazenby made it work, but this moment is probably the most notable moment from that movie.
I saw this one when I was doing my research. I've never seen that Bond film.
You've never seen?
Never.
You have to, I think, if you're a Bond fan.
I don't think, if I went over the James Bond movies, I don't think I've seen half.
Really?
True.
I've seen them all. I've done a marathon. You know, not all in one day.
I've seen all the Daniel Craigs.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
It doesn't count.
I would say I've seen half the Pierce Brosnans.
Oh, come on, man. You haven't seen all the Pierce Brosnans? Those were the 90s.
I know. Missed some of those.
What about Timothy Dalton?
I missed just about all of those.
There's only two.
Okay, missed both of them then.
Really?
And then I would say Sean Connery, I've only seen maybe two.
I've seen them all.
Mm.
Dr. No is fantastic. Come on.
And then our guy in the 80s.
Yeah, Roger Moore.
Roger Moore. I saw quite a few of his.
Octopussy?
That's because I was like really young, and my parents would have to bring me, or my dad was into the Bonds, so I saw him.
Well, those were also the summer tentpole action movies at the time, you know? They still are, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we had Bond.
My number two, Matt?
Yeah.
Total classic. Comes up a lot here on Cinema.
It's better than Bond?
You can almost make an argument.
Okay.
Not as a full film series, because this one only had one film. I'm speaking of, and it really the entire film is breaking the fourth wall, Ed Norton, Brad Pitt, Fight Club.
Yeah.
Right away you have Ed Norton constantly talking to the camera just about, you know, consumerism and right from the get-go. So he's already more or less breaking that fourth wall. But where I really love it is when there's a sequence in this movie where they start talking about how Tyler Durden, Brad Pitt, is a projectionist. And he talks about how it works and you got to look for the cigarette burns in film. And they actually point to the cigarette burn in the actual movie we're watching, Fight Club. Wow, it was awesome. Not to mention there's the ending scene where he always talks about putting a picture of a penis inside the film really quick. Slicing this and editing it into the roll of film, and then we get that at the very end of Fight Club as well. There's a quick take of a penis really fast. So there's all of that, plus Tyler Durden, that one scene where he starts talking to the camera and everything starts to shake, looking at Brad Pitt's face. The whole thing, the whole movie,
God,
really is a whole.
I got to rewatch Fight Club. I think it's come up a lot on the jaw lately.
It's great, man.
It is.
All right, we're into our number ones, man.
Yeah, how about it? You mentioned Mel Brooks earlier, but I think we've argued about this film. Is it a masterpiece? Is it not? And I lost that argument somehow, but I still think that Spaceballs is a masterpiece. One of the best parodies of all time. And it's not just Star Wars. They take the entire sci-fi genre and send it up. But even if you're not a fan of sci-fi, this movie functions on its own. It is a comedy gem classic. And when they break the fourth wall in this movie, they break it hard. And I think the best scene, actually, why don't we just roll tape on this, Phil?
Try here. Stop.
All right, this is it.
What the hell am I looking at?
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
The past then.
When?
Just now. We're at now now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
How soon?
Sir.
What?
We've identified their location.
Where?
It's the moon of Vega.
Good work.
Set a course and prepare for our arrival.
When?
1900 hours,
by
sir.
By high noon tomorrow, they will be our prisoners.
Oh!
I love it.
When will then be now? Soon.
The writing. That, oh, man. Mel Brooks, what a genius.
Ah, genius is the right word.
Yeah. I actually, preparing for the list, actually watched that entire scene. And
it's great.
Yeah. Wow. It's hilarious. That's a movie I'd love to watch start to finish. It probably, it's one of those, I'm like, ah, it's been a while. But if I really thought about it, 15 plus years since I've seen it from start to finish.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Dude,
long time.
I don't think it's been that
I
long
I catch
for me,
clips but... here or there, you know, I'll put on or something, but yeah.
Rick Moranis.
The Rick Moranis person I see more is the
Rick Moranis from Dark
Helmet. Rick Moranis. When was the last time I talked about Rick Moranis? He's great.
There you go.
He's awesome.
There you go. All right. My number one, it's easy for me. I think I didn't put it at number one because I just talked about Annie Hall when we did our favorite dinner scenes.
Yeah.
And I bring up Woody Allen all the time, but I think arguably.
He breaks the fourth wall a lot.
A lot. And in Annie Hall, when they're standing in the movie line, is one of the classics in cinema.
That's where you're
history.
Going, huh?
But no, and that's where I'm not going.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, I put that as an honorable mention because I didn't want to keep going on about what... My number one is the one that Deadpool mocked. It is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, hands down.
Yeah, it's a worthy one.
I mean, when you're talking about breaking the fourth wall and talking to the camera the way Ferris did, in the opening 20 minutes of Ferris Bueller... is about as good as comedy gold gets.
I know it sounds childish, but lick your palms.
How about when he picks up the flute and he plays it, just that ridiculous melody, and he says, never had one lesson. Yeah.
The whole thing, when he's in the shower and he starts talking about Kafka and stuff. It's great.
And he even explains like how tight Cameron is, you know?
Yeah.
If you took a piece of coal.
Yeah. In 2 weeks, you'd have a diamond.
And then even Cameron, in a lot of ways, is breaking the fourth wall, and to some degree, when he's laying in the bed, and he's like, he'll keep calling me, he'll keep calling, even though he's talking to himself, but it's still a play on that, you know?
I think Cameron does break the fourth wall at some point in the movie, doesn't he?
He does.
And it talks directly to the camera?
Mm.
Maybe not. Maybe it's just Ferris.
It's great. It is awesome. Some honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Before we go to break, Wolf of Wall Street, and this is... At this point in cinema history, just talking to the fourth camera doesn't seem like it's breaking the fourth wall as much. So there isn't anything too clever other than DiCaprio addressing the camera straight on.
The best part is when he says, I made $50 million dollars, which pisses me off because I was $2 million shy of a million
a week. Yeah. I had End of Goodfellas in there. Amelie is just... a magical film, and there's some great moments there where Amelie is talking about, you know, all these things that she likes to do. She likes to go to the movie theater and
Skipping
turn around
stones.
And do all, and that entire part, just magical. I love everything about Amelie.
Yeah,
and
me
then
too.
I was watching one doing the research for this, and I didn't even really think about it, but it is so true. When Eddie Murphy just gives a look to the camera in Trading Places and really breaks the fourth wall, and it's that very famous cut of Eddie Murphy when he's sitting down and they're talking to him and he just sort of turns and looks right at the camera.
Yeah, done for comedic effect.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, they never break the fourth wall again, but there's just a moment and a glance where he looks at the camera like, can you believe this? To the audience. It's hilarious.
Yeah. There's one, my only honorable mention comes from a movie that I haven't seen, I got to admit, but I really, really want to, and it's come up a lot. And they even remade this as an American version of Funny Games. So completely unavoidable in doing the research, and it should at least be mentioned that it's on my list to see.
Nice.
You've seen it, right?
I have not seen
it. You saw the American remake, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Check it out. I will. We'll maybe for October.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fourth wall.
Speaking of fourth walls, I just hit one. No? If we missed your favorite breaking of the fourth wall scene and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw or a good old-fashioned email, feedback@cinemajaw.com. What we're going to do is take a break where me, Matt, and Phil talk about what we're going to do on the next couple of segments. And when we come back, Matt is taking Phil on in Josh Brolin, Ryan Reynolds movie trivia. Plus, I'm going to give a quick take on finally catching up with the Avengers. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Concerning the film Two-Lane Blacktop, three 1955 Chevrolets were used as the street racers in the film. One of the cars, the one with the twin carburetors, was driven by Harrison Ford in American Graffiti, and was the car seen at the gas station in the film. The 210 Coupe, aka the second vehicle, was recently located in Canada, intact and untouched. The third car had a full roll cage installed and was later used in the rollover scene, also in American Graffiti. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw. Matt, before we get to trivia, all right, we did throw a few items into the jaw box.
Yeah.
And I know Phil wants to pop out of there.
Break his fourth wall.
Exactly.
So we're really beating this over the head.
So let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
What's in the box?
Hey, guys, how's it going? So there are not only four walls in this cinema jaw, there are four questions in this jaw box, which is a lot. I feel like we did a pretty good job stuffing stuff in here. The first one, what streaming service is Wind River on? That is Netflix. So it's on the big boy. I know Ryan was saying a lot of people haven't seen it. Almost everybody has Netflix, so almost everybody can't see it now.
It's great, I'm telling you, because I don't think you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
You'll really enjoy it. It's about, missing girl on an Indian reservation. Yeah, the FBI gets called in. It's great.
Hawkeye,
Elizabeth Olsen.
Black Scarlet Witch. Yeah.
Yep, check it out.
So then the next one, what are the celebrity fourth wall breaks in The Big Short? You guys had mentioned Margot Robbie in the tub, but then there's also one from Selena Gomez and Anthony Bourdain.
So three of them. I remember Selena Gomez now that you say it.
Anthony Bourdain, he's the food guy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that also. Okay. You had to tell me who he was. Now it rings a bell, right?
This is Two-Lane Blacktop streaming anywhere? I actually could not find it available to stream anywhere, but you can buy it. There's a Criterion collection for it, and it's on DVD, so if you wanted to actually purchase a physical copy, you could do that through Amazon.
This is one of the movies I bet you can find on YouTube if you search around for it. I know it's online.
Okay.
But I highly encourage people to go ahead and buy the Criterion.
Yeah, or check your local library, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last one, who directed Nice Guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang? That was Shane Black.
Shane Black. What did I call him? I said, what did I say?
I think you might have said Shane Black.
I don't think he did. No. I remember when I looked
it up. He said something black.
I was like, who the hell is he talking? He was wrong. Yeah.
Shane
Jack,
Black.
Jack Black.
I had the name wrong. Was that everything?
That is all.
All right. Get back in the jaw box.
Can do.
Hey, breaking fourth walls, there really is a jaw box. Some people think,
No, I know. He's back in there.
Yeah.
Can't even see him right now.
Nope.
Yeah. All right, Matt. And before we get to trivia, and you did bring the CinemaJaw trophy.
I did. It's right here. Yeah.
All right. Before we get to trivia, I did want to give just a quick take because I finally caught up with Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
No, I'm not going to go on and bash the movie completely.
Okay.
But I do think that the movie had the benefit of playing off the hype of the fans quite a bit so that everybody was so into the moment. They're very forgiving of a few, what I would say, weak moments in the script. And one of those being, and I know you say that Thanos left Thor for dead, but I was saying...
He threw him into the void of space after blowing up his ship.
If his goal is to kill half of population, yes. then he would just be killing people left and right. He would never even take the chance of leaving them alive, you know? I mean, he has them right into the palm of his hand at any time, can kill him in that beginning. And for some reason, he just doesn't give him a fatal blow.
Well,
it's
here's
just
the
ridiculous.
Thing. He underestimates Thor. He blows up the ship as he's leaving. So he sets off this chain reaction. The whole ship explodes, and Thor's body is left floating in space.
As for things that I did like, since we're going quick here, I did really appreciate, and you alluded to this in your review, when the Guardians get split up and the people that they are interacting with is pretty fantastic, and especially that moment where Star-Lord and his group meet some of the Avengers, and nobody knows who's who. I love that entire sequence, and we don't get enough of that in these kind of movies. For some reason, everybody knows who the superheroes are and the villains, but in reality, something like this, it was so perfectly played. Why would Star-Lord know who this person is? Why would they know who the Guardians of the Galaxy are? I love that whole mix-up.
Yeah, I did too. That was awesome.
But 2 hours and 40 minutes, I'll give them credit. It didn't feel that long. It did go pretty fast. But I think at the core of it, like, really not all that much happened. I mean, from moving it from what Thanos was trying to accomplish to what he did accomplish, I don't think needed the full 2 hours and 40 minutes. It was like so much buildup, again, because of the hype around the movie, I think helped sell it.
What about Thanos?
And I thought, okay, and then you had made a comment that he was the best villain, at least so far, out of Marvel, and that somehow, I don't want to say that you thought he was better than Heath Ledger, but he rivaled, something along those lines. Not even close. Was he good? Serviceable.
I say if he wasn't an animated motion capture character.
And there's times I have trouble with that.
I do too.
With the hands. I'm saying even in as good as they did it, there's a couple of moments where he's got to pick up these little gems, or he's got that little dagger that he gives, a character.
Gamora.
Yeah, Gamora, whatever her name is. And those kind of moments actually still to this day look really bad when it's the close-up of the hands. It just looks clumsy when somebody who's not there and it's very big handing it to someone who is there. There's just those little exchanges. It's like, we're still not there where that looks, completely believable. But, I mean, as the performance of Josh Brolin, yeah, pretty solid, but nowhere near even the stratosphere of what Heath Ledger did with the Joker.
I don't know, man.
So I thought 2.5 Jaws. Enjoyed it.
From you, that's a glowing review.
Yeah. That's my take on the Avengers. That's all I really got. I wasn't that pumped. So we'll have to wait for the next one, part two.
Yes, we will.
Yep. All right. Let's end this with some fun trivia. Deadpool trivia. Ryan Reynolds, Josh Brolin starring in this film, Deadpool 2. So that's our topic this week.
Okay.
Phil, you're our engineer / guest this week. You get to choose if you want to go first or let this guy go first. There's steals, and if you get hung up on a question, you get one. Rescue me, Ryan.
All right. I'm definitely going first. I want to win this one.
Phil, question one. Before Ryan Reynolds was Deadpool, he starred in this 2011 DC comic movie.
The Green Lantern.
One to nothing. Phil, I think it's just Green Lantern.
Close enough.
We'll give it to him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a vada.
There isn't.
Okay. Question two over to Matt K. Matt, just last year, Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson starred in this action comedy. Name it.
R.I.P.D.
That is incorrect on question two. Phil, you got a chance for a steal?
I know this one. It took me a second. I'm glad that you, because I almost said that. I almost said R.I.P.D. I believe it's The Hitman's Bodyguard.
2-0, Phil. The trophy may be going inside the fish tank. Question three over to Phil. Josh Brolin has starred in 4 Coen Brothers movies. The first was in 2007 when he played a character named Llewellyn Moss? Name it.
Jeez, I don't know. See, this is I feel like I should know. Hail Caesar. I have no idea. I feel like that's way too recent.
Call it, friendo.
Wow. Wow. Matt, chance for a steal.
That help you?
Crawl back into this one. What do you got, Matt?
No Country for Old Men.
Ah, damn it.
Wow.
Ah, come on.
Yes, that was his first. It is 2-1. Matt is back in the ballgame. Question 4, over to Matt Kay. Matt, in 2009, Ryan Reynolds starred in The Proposal, in which he has to marry his boss to help her keep her visa. Which actress played his boss in the film?
I think I want to say Jennifer Aniston, but that was that horrible bosses thing that I'm getting mixed up. Was it like, what's her name? Rescue Me Ryan.
Whoa, question 4. He really wants to win this thing. Rescue Me Ryan.
It's like someone, Varga or something, right?
Ryan, who starred in the 2009 Ryan Reynolds film, The Proposal? And your clue is, she's also played an astronaut.
It's like horses and astronauts is all Rye ever thinks about. She also played, okay, that was a good clue. It is Sandra Bullock.
2-2, he has tied it up. And you thought it was a bad clue.
I did at first.
Question
still
5.
Still not a great clue.
Question 5 over to Phil. Name the 2015 hiking movie that starred Josh Brolin, Jake Gyllenhaal, Sam Worthington, Jason Clarke, and Keira Knightley.
What even is a hiking movie? You know?
Have you heard of hiking?
I know what hiking is, but why would I watch a movie? Hiking as a sport or an activity is boring.
I love hiking.
Hiking's great.
Hiking is literally just walking.
But it's walking through the woods.
No.
Yes.
Not always.
I suppose you can do an urban hike.
We're 2-2 right now, right?
2?
Because he stole Sandy B from me.
Question 5.
This is where I'll go to, where I'll take my rescue.
Whoa, Rescue Me Ryan. Question 5. Ryan, what was the name of that 2015 hiking movie that starred Josh Brolin? Your clue is tallest mountain in the world.
Everest?
That's not a clue.
Great,
you just
great.
Gave him the freaking answer.
He might not know it.
I wasn't
sure. Who doesn't know that?
I wasn't sure if there was like more words to it.
3-2, Phil's in the lead. Oh, God. Question 6 is over to Matt Kay. Matt, Josh Brolin has appeared in one movie with Michael Douglas. It came out in 2010 and also starred Shia LaBeouf. Name it.
Holy crap.
LaBeouf, Douglas, Brolin.
Traffic?
Wow, all the rescues are gone. I can't help you out with
you
a clue,
you got this one, Phil?
Josh Brolin, Michael Douglas, 2010, and LaBeouf was in it.
So I think that this was before, like, the Farmer Revenge movie. I'm just going to go high school Shia LaBeouf. I'm going to guess Eagle Eye. Damn it.
We were looking for Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps. That's interesting. It's 3-2, Phil, question 7, over to Phil. Name the 2013 animated film.
Oh, come on.
About a snail that had voices by Ryan Reynolds and Paul Giamatti.
Turbo. DreamWorks Turbo.
It's over, Mac. It
That's
is
not
4-2.
Fair. No animated questions when it's me versus Phil.
4-2. 4-2. Phil wins this one. Last question of the game over to you, Matt. Matt, Josh Brolin has played one real-life president. Which president did he portray?
That's a good question. Did he play Barack Obama?
Chance for a steal, Phil. You got to guess.
See, that's where you're wrong, Matt. You were a term too early. I believe it's actually Donald J. Trump.
We were looking for George W. Bush in W.
We were really close, actually. Just a few presidents off.
Wow. Congratulations, Phil. You win the CinemaJaw trophy.
I always knew I could.
Will you keep it in the fish tank in the jaw box?
Oh, yeah. It's going to smell like salt water. It's going to smell like garbage. It's a good time. This is a historic moment for me because this is the first time I won out of like five against Matt.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
Matt can't win anything lately.
I know.
Last week, I crowned 12 in a row on him on Cinema War. And now this week, Phil
takes the trophy away.
Yeah. You got nothing, Matt.
I have to say, I do wholeheartedly believe that there was no like divine intervention that helped me win. I think Ryan kind of planned this because he gave me that turbo question.
Seriously. And that clue, that turbo! Everest clue.
Hey, jawbreaker was this, Matt. Better actor, Josh Brolin or Ryan Reynolds?
Josh Brolin.
Yeah, yep, no question that. Age of Michael Douglas, closest to, was the real jawbreaker. What do you got, Matt?
Michael Douglas, huh?
Yep, needed in a hurry here.
Okay. He is 65 years old.
Lock him in at 65. Phil, you got a guess?
I was originally going to say 56. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. I'll go nine less.
Okay, let's see who's further off here. Michael Douglas, 73 years old.
Wow. Oh, God.
Wow.
73?
73 for Michael
Douglas. Kirk
Douglas
has finally shuffled off this mortal coil, right?
No, he's still alive.
Dude, is he? Holy crap, he's got to be like 107.
They just wheeled him out at the Golden Globes, and he was in really, really bad shape.
Jeez.
But he was still alive.
Good for him.
So,
wow.
Wow. Good stuff. Brings us to the end of a great jaw.
It does.
So.
It's a weird way to end it.
Yeah. First and foremost, we got to thank our guest / engineer /
trophy winner.
Yeah. Trophy winner and trivia winner, Phil.
Thank you guys so, so much. My only regret is that, it's not even a regret, but my only wish is that we had a 2D award or like a certificate so I could put it on my refrigerator. It's going to be hard to magnet our trophy up there now.
Just put it up on the top.
By the blender? No.
Oh, well. Put it on
your mantle. Don't be crazy.
Yeah. Matt, we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yes. Thanks to Second City Training Center and the Chicago Podcast Co-op who help us get great sponsors.
Yeah. And if you want to support the Jaw, you can always leave us a review on iTunes or get involved with Patreon.
Yes. Do the Patreon thing because it's fantastic. Go to patreon.com/cinemajaw. And join in all the fun. We have cool rewards at all the levels, and we're going to be doing some new stuff there very soon.
Very exciting.
It will be.
Until next week, I'm Ry the Movie Guy.
I'm Matt Kay.
And keep on jawing about the movies.